Patrick Vieira, rapiding round from midfield.
Messa fuori, c'è Pirlo, 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 ancora Pirlo, di tacco, tiro,
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Football Weekly Podcast. I'm your co-host, Reggie. Tonight we have the other co-host, Joe, on the phone, and we have another special guest. Tonight we have Maria Procopio. For those of you that don't know that name, she's also known as, or better known as, Coach Maria. So we're going to be talking to her, getting into a little bit of her journey and what she's doing now. So guys, stay tuned for that. But as usual, you can get to our podcast from our website, footballweekly.com. That's football spelled F-U-T-B-O-L, weekly.com. You can subscribe to us on Twitter, @football_weekly. You can subscribe to us on Instagram, @football_weekly_podcast. You can subscribe to download all the episodes as well on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Player FM. We're on Spotify, we're iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts. We're on every platform you use to download podcasts. So guys, another jam-packed show. Let's get into it. So sit back, relax, get stuck in with the Football Weekly Podcast. We'll be back after this.
This is Ronaldo! And that is 1-0 to Brazil.
Where he was heading, Zidane just shows it to Gilberto Silva and then pirouettes away from him.
Hi, I'm Brandon John from Atletico Ottawa, and you're listening to the Football Weekly Podcast.
Joe, the more things change, the more they stay the same, I think. That's for me. I can say that.
Yeah.
You would think with all the rest and all the, you know, time to get things sorted, that, you know, you'd come back a little bit prepared, but it's frustrating.
If you think back to when we started this, Reg, there was one segment we did where I consoled, I counseled, we did a little segment where we helped out Arsenal fans, and today will be no different. So later on in our podcast, that's what we'll do, but it'll hopefully.
You can't console me, Joe.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I can console you. I don't know if I can fix you. or your thoughts on Arsenal. We'll try.
I don't think so. But anyways, guys, thanks for joining us for another episode of the Football Weekly Podcast. Again, if you've been listening for the last, Joe, 7-8 weeks now, we've always had a guest on, and tonight's no different again.
Well, Joe, we have a very, very, yeah, I'm ready to go. I got it.
Let's go.
You're anticipating this. I get it. I understand. But I got it. I think I got it too. So this week, we're looking forward to, and we always look forward to interviewing all of our guests, but this is a very, very special guest who's been a supporter of ours. And that's how we got to know each other. We just, our podcast and this person's amazing work that she's doing as a incredibly talented coach in this country, well-versed as a player. So Coach Maria Procopio is going to be joining us tonight. She was a very, very talented youth player, and she carried that on into opportunities playing the national teams, the youth Italian national teams, and being capped there. She also played down in the United States, again in university. Was a very successful university player. And like a lot of us, a lot of players have an amazing passion for the game and, you know, have had some success. They want to pass it on. And Maria had a great passion for coaching and, you know, didn't just rest on her laurels, took a big chance, you know, moved overseas for a bit and learned from the very best in Europe, you know, getting UEFA qualifications and B licenses and so on. And giving back. And that continued also not only to Coach Maria Soccer, which is gaining a ton of ground and hitting the ground running daily with interviews and training and so on, but also Maria is giving back even more by being part of Fast and Female, a charity organization that helps, you know, girls with role models and so on. And just, again, giving and giving. Wow, how was that, Reg? Maria,
fantastic.
Is that okay?
No, that was perfect. And I feel bad here because, you know, I'm a diehard Juve fan, and I don't know if I'm going to get slack or you're going to have to console me too after after all of this as well.
I think out of the three of us, Maria, first of all, welcome. No, you don't need any consoling. I mean, yes, Juventus did lose yesterday in Coppa Italia in a shootout, but I mean, you're talking to an Arsenal fan, and it gets even worse because I'm a Milan fan. So, I mean, really, in this, yeah, I think we need the consoling. So, exactly. Yeah. Welcome.
We're still love seven, it. Thanks, guys, for having me.
We're still seven trophies behind you. So, you know, that's us that's going to need the consoling, I think. So, Maria, we always start our shows off when we have guests, finding out their passion for football and what made them fall in love with the sport of football. So there has to be a team. There has to be a story behind it. So just tell us a little bit about your story, how you started to fall in love with even Juve.
So I think when I moved to Maple when I was three, I was living across the street from Wonderland. And I remember I wanted to play, and my brother's 10 months, 3 weeks older. So we grew up pretty close, and he started playing for Vaughan Soccer Club. And I begged and begged and begged. My dad was the coach, and I said, please, please, please. And I think I look back on it and I joke around. I actually don't think I was a player, but I was given a uniform and just kind of allowed to kick the ball, the ball around.
That's great.
And then I just kind of fell in love with it. I mean, I started playing up with the boys, with Vaughan. So I did Maple Fest. I did all of that stuff as a house league player. We finally started a girls division when I was eight. I played in that, and then I played with the boys, my own age group, and just kind of moved up. And I fell in love with it. My brother stopped playing, but I continued to play. And Juventus, I didn't know how big it was in my family. And I always say, like, Paolo Maldini is one of my favorite players. And I loved AC Milan. I loved Roma. I loved so many players. I remember for Christmas or Easter or my grandfather's birthday one time, my family's originally from North Bay. So I brought him up. I was so excited to bring him up a Roma jersey. I went over to Italy. I got it for him for his birthday, I think it was. And I brought it to him. And I remember the look on his face. He was mortified that I brought it. I was probably 8 or 9 years old at the time. And I remember bringing him this jersey, and he was like, he didn't know what to say or do. And I was like, I don't get it. And then, so that's when my passion and love started to come out. And ever since then, it's just been all Juve. He actually sat me down, and I remember chatting about his love for Juve, and he would show me everything. And he was a member of Juventus, even though he was from Udine. I mean, he was a Juve fan, and he had like a little banner that he was part of a Juventus club in Italy. Wow. When he came over from Italy to migrate to Canada. So I remember him telling me, but I'll never forget the look on his face when he I gave him that jersey.
That's like a social media moment. If that happened today, that would have been like all over the internet and social media, right? So that's one of the original. That's a great tutorial. And this sounds very familiar, where older relatives try to, you know, quote unquote, put you and set you straight. So that's amazing. That's a great story.
Yeah.
Italian grandfathers and fathers, they don't mold their sons into or sons or daughters into fans of theirs, do they? No, they don't do that.
No way.
It's funny. Well, Maria, good for you, because you know you were a good student, because I wasn't. My uncle tried to get me to like Juventus, and I said, "Well, okay, that's great. But who's this? Like, who?" I'm a bit older than you, but you know, who's that team that they're playing? Well, that's AC Milan. But we didn't, you know. And then I went the other way. I said, so I went on the team that he wanted. That was the rival. But that's an amazing story. But yeah, you're better than me.
Yeah, and that's on my mom's side. I mean, my cousin had a really long career with Inter in their academy. Unfortunately, tore everything in his knee as he was getting, you know, his scholarship. So at 16, so he was a big Inter player, so I should have been an Inter fan, but my grandfather, my dad on my mom's side would have never let me. So I'm torn between the two, but I'll watch anything now. I mean, there's so many great players and teams, and I love good stories, not just obviously I love Juventus, but I love good stories from good teams, and I'll watch anything, especially during COVID. I mean, when the German league got on, I'm sure everybody put that on just because it was the first thing back
up. League of fans, even if you weren't, but
I know, right?
That's such a good point, and we chat about this every week, and I think we all have our allegiances. We're all tied to a club that, you know, tugs at our heartstrings and makes us laugh, cry, and so on. But the appreciation, I think, when we're involved like we are, you do appreciate all teams as well. So that's great to hear for sure. Yeah. Even Reggie will tip his hat to Spurs. No, maybe not. But anyway.
What?
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying, Maria. I'm trying.
never. So, Maria, there has to be a point or even a moment in the World Cup, or your favorite World Cup, even if you can remember any of those memories. We'd sure like to hear that.
Yeah, so many memories. I mean, I have so many. Like every memory, everyone always says, like, I forget my childhood memories. Everything I remember about, like, when I was younger was around soccer and football. So it's crazy because I remember we were late to go somewhere, and we were watching the infamous Baggio over the net free kick. Yeah. And I remember my dad and my grandfather storming out of the house and just like kind of saying words that maybe a 4-year old shouldn't have heard. And I remember that time, but I'll never forget the 06 because it was a crazy day for me. So Vaughn, we were playing in Ontario Cup semifinals at Maple Community Center, which on that nice grass field that's gated. And obviously you're surrounded by Italian homes and there was a party right there, right at one of the houses of the people watching it outside. So all of us don't really care about the semifinals. Obviously you care in Ontario Cup semifinals, but it's a big game for us. And I remember I lived, five-minute drive from the field, and I had four of my teammates on my street. So, I mean, we were ready to go, like, during the game. And I remember we were going to miss the first half because of Ontario Cup. And I remember the first half, all the excitement there and the fans that were giving us the updates as we're playing Ontario Cup.
And
the minute the game was over, our coach couldn't talk to us. We won to go to Ontario Cup finals. And we were like, we're hightailing out of here.
Yeah, we're gone.
We didn't. And obviously my mom, their parents weren't coming to pick us up because it was game time. So we ran home with our soccer stuff in all our Vaughn gear. And we went home, we watched, we just made the end going into the penalty shots. Wow. We watched the penalty shots. We went down to St. Clair and stayed there till 5 a.m. with our shin pad socks.
Oh, wow.
Vaughn gear on in the
That's
street.
Amazing.
I mean, no, didn't even change, did nothing, and just went down and,
Maria, you're up for like maybe story of the podcast. I'm biased, but Reggie, I don't know, man.
That's not bad.
That's pretty good.
That's not bad.
Oh, boy.
That's a little bit of passion, right?
That is a bit of passion, I tell you. That's amazing. That's a great story.
Not only that, but lost my voice and had to start summer school the next morning. So got back home at 5 and had to go to summer school the next morning.
That's amazing. That's great.
Yeah. Best memory, though.
So we always ask about a pair of shoes as well, a piece of equipment actually that you remember the most as well. And this is something that we ask everybody. I think we've pretty much said Predator every week, but we'll ask you. What pair of shoes do you remember from your childhood that you say, you know what, that signifies me? That's Maria's shoe.
Yeah, you know what? It's so funny because I worked for Nike for 9.5 years. I actually left my career at Nike to become a full-time coach, was moving up through the Nike system pretty fast in retail and the footwear department there. And I obviously had so many Nike boots given to me and I liked them and I was learning about soccer there. But I grew up, and I feel like I'm speaking and it's all Italian stuff. I grew up obviously Diadora, but I'll never forget. I saved up my first paycheck for Nike to buy these for the commemorating 06 boots. They were Diadora all gold with the stars for Italy. And I bought them a half a size too small and I couldn't return them because I got my name engraved. And it was my first paycheck. And I was like, okay, instead of saving this paycheck, I'm going to blow it on a pair of boots. And then I went to school and I kept stretching them and tried to play in school with them without insoles and that, but I just completely destroyed my feet every time I played in them. But my God, those were the boots.
That's amazing. I think you lost Reggie though that you worked in footwear for Nike because if anybody knows Reggie, he only owns about, I don't know, 2,000 pairs of shoes.
You would have been
amazing though.
You would have been one of my best friends back then for sure.
Still get a lot of hookups with Nike and we did some sponsorship stuff with them recently and stuff. So I like you, I collected every kind of pair of shoes Nike had and I'm actually trying to sell my collection out because I bought my first home and that shoe collection needs to go.
Sure.
We'll talk after.
Different pod.
So Maria, you're doing so many great things. I mean, we've talked about this and like I said, we appreciate it so much on the podcast because you're one of, you know, an original person and we have a couple of them. We always talk about them who just found us and obviously shared our passion for football and for soccer. And, you know, you started listening to our shows and giving us a lot of love on social media. So we thank you for that for sure. And we just were so drawn to your passion and, you know, and you're just constantly doing things. And, you know, obviously you were a player. I mean, we're always players, but, you know, you were a player who was trying to, you know, achieve and get to a certain level and then reach, you know, a level that many people don't get to. So what says, okay, you know what? I this is where I want to be. I want to give back. I want to be a coach. What was that moment that just said, yeah, this is what I want to do in terms of, you know, my journey in football?
Yeah, no, I mean, I had a great success in every country but Canada with soccer. I mean, I excelled in the States. I excelled in, even when I went into England and played a little bit there, and I excelled in Italy. So I just didn't have luck here. I mean, we had a really good team, but, you know, I was cut from provincial programs, not getting looks by the national program, even drove out to meet the coach because I knew they were playing in Ottawa. I begged my dad to drive me out to Ottawa to go watch the Canadian national team. I was chatting with the coach and said, please, like, give me a tryout at 13. Like, I was some crazy person in the parking lot, but I wanted to so bad play. But I mean, I had so many injuries going into school. I didn't take care of like the fitness side of things and strength and conditioning. I always was just a player that wanted to play on the ground, and going into the States, I was successful, but I would have been more successful if I focused on like the physicality of things. I didn't understand that game. I would get pushed off the ball a lot, and then I would have to come up with creative ways. So I would actually train myself away from the team environment and started doing work on myself and building sessions. And like the reason I'm on this call today and as a coach is my college coach was so great to me, Colin Peterson, and helping me kind of figure out what I was going to do after school. I didn't want to go pursue further education in anything. I wanted to come back. I was working with Nike, like I said, but I was coaching at night, and I just kind of called him one day and said, listen, like, I really, really love coaching. And his, the men's coach at Gannon was going to get his UEFA in England. So he kind of helped me along the journey of getting into this, the system and how to apply for certain courses. And I just kind of left everything at Nike and said, okay, I'm going to pack up, one day and just go. So, and then I was supposed to only be there 6 weeks and do a couple courses, which 6 weeks turned into a couple months. Got a job down there because I'm a dual citizen. And then a couple more months turned into 6 months. And then a couple more months after that turned into going on and taking my UEFA. So awesome. It wasn't planned. I just was excelling, but I completely gave up everything, like no social media, no nothing there, no going out at night. Like friends of mine after courses would go out for a drink or go out there, and I told myself I wouldn't do any of that stuff and just focus. So I literally 1 year like locked myself, and I didn't have money. I was living in London, living in a hostel, and I would just sit there and just watch and learn as much as I could. So I wanted to come back here, and you know, I could have stayed there and coached there and been successful there as a coach, but I wanted to come back here and give back. But a kind of game changing moment for me was my college coach. I mean, there were so many others. I mean, Mike Rocca as well from Umbro Showcase. Mike Rocca, shout out to him. I mean, we still get together every time. If it wasn't for him giving me a chance, because with Vaughn, we didn't have a lot of scholarship pathways yet. I think it was kind of new to Vaughn. And now you look back 12 years, now you look at Vaughn, it's known for scholarships. But
Mike does deserve a lot of credit. Absolutely. For sure.
If he didn't invite me into his showcase teams and travel teams, I mean, I wouldn't have had luck in the States because I had no idea that that was an option. And he invited me down. So we get together and I thank him all the time, and he hates the compliments. But yeah, whenever I can shout out Colin and Mike, I do.
That's excellent. That's
sacrifices, like, right, Joe?
Absolutely. We talk about players. We've always had players on. And so, yes, of course, we have coaches, but we don't hear that, you know, a lot of coaches, and they, you know, we don't maybe highlight it enough, that coaches and people involved in you know, sport, but obviously for us, it's football, that they sacrifice a lot too. And they put a lot on the line and take and make choices to, you know, grow the game. And Maria, that's a fantastic example. It's even more highlighted for us because, you know, and this is, we're so lucky to have someone who's a female doing this stuff. And we want to make sure that we get that word out for female coaches and female players. And you're doing that. And that's amazing. What a great example. So you're coaching your players, you're training your players and saying it's about sacrifices. And like Reggie just said, well, that's a pretty big sacrifice that not even players make, you know, leaving your home, you know, not getting much money and sacrificing. That's an amazing story for boys, girls, anybody, for a human being. That's amazing.
I'm glad you mentioned about not getting a look here in Canada. A lot of players that are playing now aren't getting a look by the Canadian national team.
Amen.
We won't get into that, but you're not the only one, believe me. You mentioned this quickly. You played in England, you played in Italy. Just how did that come about?
anyone, shout out to anyone who wants to move to England and live off 3 pounds a day, so 6 pounds Canadian. Send me a message of how to make that work and how you can live balling on a budget was what I was calling it back then. So with Italy, I had gotten cut from the provincial program. That was before emails, before they told you to send me a letter in the mail. Still have it. Actually, just moved to my first, like I said, bought it my first home. Found the letter and kind of looked at it, and I just remember all these bad memories of reading it and stuff. And the main reason why I was cut is it was short. I was playing center sweeper at the time, so basically that was the reasoning to being cut. And I just didn't understand and couldn't process it. And I ended up taking a trip to Italy. Through Centro Scuola, we knew someone there, and I was an Italian citizen at the time, and I was just going out for a fun tour to play a couple games and stuff, and female soccer was just getting big there. So I went there. I spoke a little bit of Italian, but I just decided to kind of go and see and be immersed in the culture on the soccer side, because obviously you go and visit family and you just touch the ball with your cousins, but you never get to play. And I played, and they liked me right away and said, can you come here in September? And I said, well, I'm starting grade 9. I don't know. Like, I looked at my mom, and my mom looked at me and she said, go, like, this is a huge opportunity for you. And I was like, well, I'm 14, but okay, if you want me to go, I'll go. And just packed my stuff up and made me go by myself. Was living at my grandmother's house as much as I could so she could teach me Italian. And I moved there when I was 14, didn't know anyone. There was another Canadian girl playing there, which was great for me. So she could help me with the barrier and the different culture. And I was doing school online and like an air quote school online grade 9. I wasn't really doing it because I was just playing and playing right, all the time. And I moved up from playing kind of third division to second to first, then playing for the provincial. So the provincial program there and the region there, and then got into Calcetto, which is small sided stuff. Got I was playing for the region of Abruzzo for Calcetto. We went to a tournament and the U19 coach found me there. And then started invite me in, and now we're flying out to different parts of Italy to play in games and stuff. And I would have been there still if it wasn't for my mom coming down about, June or July to see me. And when I saw her for the first time, and this is before FaceTime or Skype or anything, I was just talking to her on the phone. First time I saw her, I said, get me on a flight home with you and left, but still keep in touch. The president of the club I was playing third division is still the president there. And this was just outside of Pescara. So I know at some points we were trying to do some work together to get female players there, but obviously I playing there, you weren't getting paid. For me, I was lucky enough. Centro Scuola actually gave me a scholarship to live and eat there and have that kind of things paid for. But obviously they're a smaller club with not a lot of budget for females. So it hasn't changed a lot there yet, but I'm hoping, they can down the line. And I'm such an advocate for that program. And then in England, I was just coming off of playing at university and kind of got in and found out that Peterborough United, where I was living just outside of London at the time, before I moved into the city, had tryouts and stuff and went and did well. But it was too much to be playing there and coaching. So it was a hard, very, very hard decision to make alone in a country to say it's time to hang up the boots. But I knew I was there to become a coach, not a player. But it still was two moments in my life where I was obviously gaining independence, but by myself making these life-changing decisions. So definitely learn from them. But the atmosphere alone was amazing. I mean, I was seeing Italy and England in 2004 in Italy, and then in 2014 in England. And then I left England and became a coach here and never got the opportunity to go back. But obviously, friends from my UEFA, my level two, my level one, all my badges were becoming coaches on the female side, coaches coaching, unfortunately, with the Spurs. So sorry, Reg. So they were becoming all these coaches. And I said, okay, I've turned 30 in January. My mom's like, what do you want to do? Let's go away. And I said, no, just pay for my flight to go back to England. And I literally just went in January back to England. And the female game from when I was there to now is done a complete 360. And I just,
professionalized,
I went there like all the way from tier one, like category one down to category five.
Yeah.
It's just so well-structured, players move. It's fluid. It was amazing 2 weeks there. I was just at female clubs. Like, I would hit up people on LinkedIn and say, can I come and be at your club? Can I do this? Can I do that? And just everybody opened their door for me from people I didn't know. And Yeah, that was my 30th birthday gift, but I wouldn't change it for the world, because now I know that a Canadian player or an American player, a North American player can go there and have opportunities. It's hard to advocate and do that to a female player because their dream is to go into the provincial program or the Rex program. But again, you know, we're not going to get into that tonight.
No, I obviously my silence speaks maybe more than my words, but no, that's incredible. I go back to it. Like, you know, we followed you from afar, but listening to this is a great insight. And I know Reggie's thinking the same thing. And, you know, selling it. And I've made the point earlier is, you know, to sell to your players, you know, and obviously being a coach too, is selling to your players, sacrifice, commitment, you know, doing something that, you know, the other person's not going to do or what have you. It's really, it's much easier for the player to comprehend that, male or female, when they look at, hey, well, my coach has done that. Like, she's lived it. She's walked the walk. So it's a lot. You know, a young person that, you know, you can't fool young people, right? They're very honest and they're very forthright that way. So that's a huge thing to build rapport with a young player, young person. So when they say, hey, well, Coach Marie has done that, you know, she knows what it's about. I think that's a huge thing. That's a great advantage. And maybe that's a great thing for players to listen to, especially if they're looking for someone like you, Maria, to help them out. That's an amazing, amazing story.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, there's so many pathways for male or female players. It's not only in Canada. I'm hoping, and that's why I came back to Canada to try and change that. But I quickly found out that, you know, it's not up to me. I'm a small voice, even though I should be a bigger one. And it's not being cocky. I just know I'm one of the best female coaches here, and it's just I don't have a voice. And so now I'm completely changing that. And that's why I've started the private training and started being advocates for players, because I see so many players, and even the players I've been interviewing have been cut from programs. One girl playing Division I been cut from her high school team, and you know, a lot of players are leaving the sport due to this, but they could have been, you know, the next Alfonso Davies or the next Christine Sinclair.
Yeah, that's a great point. But Reggie and I always talk about this. It's not the path is not A to B. It's not straight, right? There's lots of different dips and turns. And I think sometimes, you know, and it's really shocking because in our country, obviously, well, not the women's game has been far more successful. We know that. But in terms of just, you know, players, sometimes they do get turned away, you know, and they think, well, you know, if this player made it, he's my mate, or she's my friend, and she's made it and it's already at this age, well, then there's no hope for me.
Right.
So I think that's a great gap that you're filling there too. So again, you mentioned it. Yeah, you are one of the, you know, best female coaches in our country for sure. Not many women and not many people, never mind women, not many people have your licensing. I mean, I think we can count on our hand about how many people have your licensing in Canada, especially for females. Am I wrong? Right, Maria? Maybe you can speak more to
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, I hate to say it, but Canada is my lowest license. I haven't gotten into these programs yet. I plan to, but I've always put it on the back burner. But, you know, being licensed in now 4 countries, I mean, United States, obviously got into my USSFB, but because of COVID turned that spot down just because I couldn't travel. And, you know, in Italy doing some stuff there, and then in England being the biggest, and here in Canada, obviously I have like my pre-B or C license, whatever that's equivalent to. But wanting to move up in this system and seeing it, I mean, there's so many talented, like I'm lucky enough. And I was just talking to a parent today who called me and was like, wow, you have in your private training and your coaching, you have so many female coaches. I have 6 female coaches, all licensed or ex-players, and I hire the players I recruited to the States or in Canada to coach with me because they went through my training. So they're in grade 12, coming back from university on breaks and coaching for me in the programs because they're the best teachers for that. And I want my younger players in my private training to look up to that player. And that's happening now. I mean, I have grade 11s in some of my training. I have a boy looking at Division I scholarship. He's one of our leading coaches right now. Everybody requests Coach Adam, and you know, they love him, and he went through my program. So, I'm just trying to do stuff like that. And I'm lucky enough to have five of the best female coaches for me. But again, they're getting different jobs. They're getting assistant coach job, basically picking up pylons, where I was picking up pylons and said, I'm not doing this at all. And I mean, you know, I was working with TFC and kind of walked away from that one because I didn't want to do that. I wanted to be a leader in soccer.
Now, you mentioned the licensing that you're getting and you hiring the female coaches. Just when you're getting your licenses back in the day, when you were doing that, did you run into any of the, I guess, sexism that it would be where, you know, it's kind of like an old boys club and who was this woman trying to come here and coach? And did you find any problems over there with that?
The only country I found problems with was here. And it's unfortunate because I knew the instructors on the courses. Wow. I mean, I knew I was getting my pre-B at 19 way too early. I mean, I knew I was getting passed because they needed female coaches on OPDL benches and stuff like that. So I knew with no experience how I was getting a license where it was assessed. They shouldn't have given it to me. And I'll say that then I was 19, no coaching qualifications, no experience, just kind of went into this and they kind of just shoved me through. And I ran probably, I'll never forget, the worst session anyone's ever seen. And and that was like the practice session. And they kind of gave me not the great, they just kind of said, okay, great, change this and change that, which I rather them said, this was horrendous. Don't come back and wait. But, you know, I got that license and I kind of said, okay, I have to go somewhere else and challenge myself. When I went into the US, I was lucky enough to be one of two females. And that's obviously something that I was used to. And England, I was the only one, maybe in a couple other courses, there was a couple other girls. But in England and in Italy, it wasn't you're female, I'm male. As long as you could play in the session and you had banter and you could keep up with football talk, you were fine. And obviously I had that because of my background. So I never felt it anywhere else ever. So it was great. I mean, in England, it was like part of, you know, the boys, and it wasn't an old boys club. In England, if you were 15 minutes late, you were out of the program. So you had to show up early. You had to be ready. There was no, hey, I rolled my ankle, I can't participate. You went for it. Where here, you know, you go on some licenses and no one wants to participate and you're doing triple the sessions, right? So it's structured there to be that profession. I'm hoping now that, and you know, this is shout out to Canadian soccer, we're getting it together. I mean, I was sitting on that Canadian licensing and listening to them and their plans, which is great. But I mean, we're so behind, right? And there's so many coaches going other places. And, you know, they even said that coaches are going to other places and get their licensing, but it's just so well structured there. And I never felt it anywhere else. So, you know, I'm lucky enough not to really have that. As a coach, I've had that experiences in sexism and stuff like that. Even recently, as last year in November at my previous job. So I haven't had that anywhere on the coaching certificate side of things, which has been great.
But, you know, I mean, of course, it's a constant challenge and battle. So that's one of the reasons why we wanted to hear you and have you, you know, speak to us and to our listeners and so on and give your experience with that. So Coach Maria Soccer, it is really, like we said, like, you know, steamrolling. You're always working. I find you're always interviewing, you know, coaches, male, female, players, male, female, administrators. It's really great to see, you know, that takes a lot of work. As we know, like we set up interviews and we're doing one now and you're doing that and training. What's your goal? What is your thing? And I know that you're helping young players and, you know, male and female to get to whatever next level that is. And of course, with you know, scholarships and what have you. Where do you see Coach Maria Soccer going? What's the 2, 3, 4, 5 year plan for this platform?
I don't know. It changes all the time. I mean, now going into England and being a part of that and wanting to bring players there has now opened up that pathway and trying to do that. So I've created this project called Project 3 through our private training, which is three pathways for players, Canadian, American, and European kind of looks for a player. So I'm kind of sticking into this, but I every couple of weeks kind of don't change my mind. I mean, I wanted to be with university programs. Don't get me wrong. I wanted to coach in the States or here in Canada, universities and colleges. But I won't be, if I do that, then I won't cast a wide enough net to all youth players. And I connect with players all over the world. I try to find every Canadian, just like FTF with Marcus, that he does, find Canadians playing in third division leagues and try and connect with them just to hear their story and their pathway. So that way younger players can look up to different role models and stuff. So I hit up every player I find that they're Canadian. I hit them up on Instagram or Twitter and try to get them on to speak to them so I can learn from their story as well. And, you know, tell players that that, you know, like you guys said, every pathway is different and every story is different. So I'm big on staying in what I'm doing in private training and kind of building pathways for players and being an advocate for growing the sport here, because I find we lose, and especially females. I mean, like you've talked about in my bio, fast and female. I mean, the statistics of females dropping out of sports in general is like, yeah, something like 66% of females drop out at 15, 16 years old. Yeah. So we're missing out on players dropping out. Like the male game, I'm still big in. I'm not as big as I used to be. I wish I could get that back, but my pathway is to say to that 15, 16 year old, and I've experienced 3 or 4 of them who've wanted to leave the sport. Don't leave, stay in it. I mean, I had one girl from a previous club I was working at that wanted to leave, and I said, hey, listen, play for me, let's have a good season. And she just signed on at an OUA school. So, you know, I want to do that for now. And Fast and Female is been great for that. And that's all volunteer to kind of say to these kids from all different walks, all different backgrounds, to say, listen, you have a future. I'm a role model in the sport. So I want to do that for more female players. And then, of course, help the guys out as much as I can. But I know the guys don't need as much taking care of, because there's so many people and so many good coaches out there taking care of the guys. And the females, I just find sometimes females on the female side get neglected a little bit, and there's like the power 3 or 4 clubs that really work with females, yeah, and then the rest don't.
Well, the numbers don't lie, and I think that's a huge thing. And you know, I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, in what I do as well, is we look at that stat too. And you know, there's so many female athletes that, and no matter what the sport, and I'm glad you said it, that they drop out at that age. And that's where, like, you know, we applaud you for attempting to close that gap and addressing that issue, because that is a big one. And you know, like, that's something that needs to be looked at. And I'm more glad you're fighting that fight, especially on your end. So again, kudos to you on that one.
Thank you, guys.
So how are you guys dealing? Wow. How are you guys dealing with COVID training and all that stuff? I think you're back on the field now, but how are you guys dealing with COVID?
I wasn't going to get started with it. More people pushing me saying, let's go. Can we go? I'm very hesitant to go back. I think, you know, you're obviously hearing everything about Ontario soccer. You're reading, you know, everything on when we're going to go back, and people going at Ontario soccer saying, why aren't we back yet? I didn't want to rush back. I wanted to just start training players, and I started training some NCAA players that I was, you know, working with before that are on scholarship now, or who have found me through mutual friends who have said, hey, can you train me? So I just started training players here and there. And then obviously the kids that I usually train found out and said, can we go? So it's been a battle with trying to get it out there. I see people getting slack on social media around training, and you know, clubs and parents or technical directors aren't happy with private training, especially because we're unsanctioned getting started. But again, I mean, we're trying to get players, first of all, the mental health to try to get them back on. I mean, right, some of the players coming on and like kissing the ground. I mean, you can't hug them, but you see them and you want to give them a big bear hug, because right, they're happy and you're happy to be back. So it's been good. I have to say, now I track every player we've worked with and just kind of do like basic fitness testing. We have a big uphill battle with players coming back after being off 3 months. Tons of players not being able to do longer runs or make certain times that usually before they were doing. So I think we really, as coaches, have to look at that and also look at taking it slow, because kids are getting injured, right? They're coming to training on Monday, and then they're supposed to show back up at Wednesday, and they can't do it because their legs hurt or they've pulled something. So I'm in no rush to get kids back to game fitness and game match fitness, because they're a long way off, because you don't want any injuries, right? And I think coaches, when you do get back, just focus on just the basics. And even if the basics aren't fun and it doesn't look good, and you know, your parents are telling you, oh, please let my son sweat or daughter sweat in the session. Yeah. You know, you've heard from those coaches or parents on the sideline saying, oh, why didn't you run my son or yell at my son a little bit more? Like, you just get back to basics and do the basics and then slowly build it up. So it's been a battle to get back to basics, but the kids love it. And, you know, we just try to go 45, 50 minutes with them. And we end with like a fun game to kind of get them falling in love with it again, because they're not on a regular routine.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because even watching it in the pros, and you would think that, you know, being professional, however many years these guys are, that they'd have their bodies ready. And just watching the Arsenal game yesterday, two guys down, I sent a message to Joe, they're dropping like flies. Two guys hurt in the first 20 minutes, and I think they're done for the season now. And I think it all comes down to, you know, it's when you rush back into it, and even in our kind of our beer leagues, right, just rushing back into it, we're not doing any training or anything like that. And I know there's going to be guys out there, the first thing they do is they're going to take a shot as hard as they can on net, and you're just going to hear a pop, and that's it, right? So I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, taking your time and getting people back to game fitness before we put them out and have them running full speed, right? So
yeah, no, you know, you said it right. And, you know, I know, like you said, the Arsenal game, but you look at Ronaldo dribbling the ball and everybody's going at him right now on social media. And he's always going to get it because he's one of the best players in the world currently. So him saying that he didn't practice dribbling over the 3 months, and you should see the nasty comments, but imagine what it's going to look like in the youth game. So I think, right, like I said, basics, it doesn't hurt to go back to basics. Obviously, U13 plus, you should really have those basics down, but we're in unique circumstances. You have to be able to adapt to training and just get back to simple, simple stuff. Even keep-ups. Like, I'm doing keep-ups with kids, and some of my kids that I record and test, they were testing over, and we were doing that kind of as a fun warm-up. Now they're not even doing half of what they do because they're getting out of breath and tired. And also because of the heat, we're training during the day, but that's not an excuse because usually they'd be used to that. So I think coaches listening, I've started now, I'm 4 weeks in, and even NCAA division players training with us, or OUA players, they're gassed.
Whether it be pro players, youth players, I think when people, you know, sports science is such a big part of, you know, and periodization is such a big part of our vocab now, not just even amateur and professional sports. And, you know, Reggie mentioned that, you know, professional players getting hurt. You're talking about youth players having an adjustment. I think this speaks more to how important the sports science is in sport today. And I think it's like, you know, for us not to pay attention to it, just in my opinion, then we can't complain about when there's injuries and so on, right? We have to control the load, right? And I think that's the thing. So it's interesting to hear from, you know, the pro aspect all the way to, you know, here you are, Maria, trying to manage, you know, different players, different ages and different abilities too. It's not just playing ability, but also, you know, fitness ability and what they've done on their own. So again, mm-hmm. that's why Absolutely. You're there, and that's why Coach Maria Soccer is there, right? That's what you're there to do, right? It's not
yeah.
That's why your training programs are in place. So we absolutely loved hearing from you. Maria, we should know this by now, but just so, you know, new listeners, people listening, where can we follow you, find you, and hear more about you?
Yeah, so obviously my biggest platform is Instagram, and I didn't know, and this is like going back 6 months, I didn't know anything about social media, anything. So I was working with someone at a club, and they kind of helped me out with it and kind of steered me on the path. So I'm big on that now, and I try to do as much as I can on there daily. So Coach Maria Soccer on both Instagram and Twitter are the best ways to find me. And I will talk about anything. I will help you out. And if I can't help you, I'm not someone that will tell you I can help you. I will point you in the right direction. So I try to do that as much as possible. And I don't know everything, but I will find someone who knows something to help every player and every coach and every parent with a certain problem and solution. If I don't know a coach at a university and someone's looking for a scholarship to that school, I'll try and find someone to match them up. So I'm not someone that says I know everything. I'm a small part, but I do have a good following with players. And I'm hoping that one day they'll be wearing a professional jersey or a club national team jersey.
Amazing. Awesome. And like, that's couldn't be said better. You know, if you can help, you will help. So again, Maria has given her information. You guys should know her a lot more. Like I said, the following is growing, and it's for a good reason. So if you're a young player or a parent or anything like that, and you're listening, of course, make sure to hit up Maria on those platforms. Maria, it was a pleasure.
Thanks, guys, so much. And hopefully when this is all over, I can come see this beer league you guys are talking about.
See you
guys.
I don't know if you want to see that, Maria.
You don't want to see that. But just come for the beer after, I guess. You don't want to see us play. That's for sure.
Awesome.
Maria, thank you for joining us, and we really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Well, that was Coach Maria telling us a little bit about her journey through trials and tribulation of soccer, and fantastic interview, fantastic stories. And you know, everybody has amazing. Their own story, and it's so nice to hear everyone's unique story.
Amen. Yeah, I thought that Maria spoke again so eloquently and full of passion and full of drive, and good on her. She's doing good things, and it was great to hear her story. And she just, you know, keeps doing her thing and working hard and helping young players. So it was great to hear from her. It was actually great. I was really happy to hear her story.
Yeah, even though she mentioned the Spurs a couple of times, we still, I guess we got to let
still
that go.
Runs deep, eh?
But yeah. Speaking of
man, teams, you're saying that she's a Juventus fan, and I'm okay with it. You still she mentions two coaches or a couple of coaches that are Spurs. Man,
nope.
You'll learn to live with this red story.
I will not. Speaking of North London, teams in North London, we are the Oof. One the one in red started when yesterday, Joe.
The one good thing about that game was
Okay,
if you're an Arsenal fan, okay, hold on, let me see. Yeah. Okay, it's over, but I do like your kits. You know, you guys have, I'm telling you, your kits, like, I like that kit. That's a great kit.
Oh, my God.
Okay, listen, Arsenal fans, and, you know, we got a big Arsenal fan other than Reggie who listens to our show. There's a lot of you guys, but, you know, Marcus, you know, Hansen too from FTF and so on. Guys, listen, it's really simple, okay? And, of course, you know, Fred too. You remember Fred? Remember that guy? So anyway, So listen, were you going to beat Man City? Maybe not, right? Chances are you weren't going to beat him. So the only thing is you got this problem at center back. I mean,
for
that's
how
the
many
whole
years, Joe?
Problem.
How many years? How many years would you say listen, that the problem is?
Yeah, you know, all joking aside, I watched the game after Reg. I watched the, you know, because I was watching the Coppa Italia game, and then I did watch the Arsenal. Yeah, I did watch the Arsenal City game after. But I got to say this. I watched the interviews after, and I got to give a lot of credit to David Luiz. So I had an awful performance. I mean, a shambolic nightmare, shocker, all this stuff that we want to say.
What, he came out and said, it's my fault?
He came out. Yeah, I don't even know if you – did you see that, Reggie?
But, Joe, he came out, it is his fault.
No. Hear me out. Most players who have those kind of nightmares, they don't talk to the media, or they don't. He wasn't going to come out, and he did come out. And he made it a point to tell the commentators that, yeah, he's going to come out. And even the commentator was very, very forthright in thanking him. Now I'm going past the, you know, City and Arsenal result, and we'll talk about that. I know Reggie needs some therapy on this one.
I just want to, the reason why he came out to talk to you, to talk to the commentators and the interviewer is because he's done it so many times that he's well practiced at coming out and saying, hey, listen, it was my fault. Well, Chelsea,
well,
Liverpool, now City, all the big teams. It's red cards.
So what? Okay, and I'll touch upon that. You know what? For me, first of all, and I'll get to it. But you know, again, I just thought as I was watching it, you know, I'm sitting in the spot where I was watching it, and I said, you know what, this, you know, and I've been, you know me, Reg, I've been going after him for years because it's hard to be a defender when you don't like to defend. You know, it kind of goes hand in hand.
Yeah,
But again, so I just thought, wow, you know what? The human side came out of it, you know, and said, wow, you know, at least he came out and he was very genuine. He wasn't just like, you know, and so on. But again, I am not a Gunners fan, like diehard. So it was thing. But here's what we're talking about. So now everyone says that's the fluffy part of it. I got it. We'll deal with David Luiz. How do you let a ball bounce? Like a center back, it's stuff that is so amateur. And I just thought,
Joe, I'm looking at the goal. I'm looking at what his body position is. I'm looking at
it's raining though, Joe. Yeah.
If like a ball is coming like at me like that, I take another 2-3 steps backwards.
It's just his. Yeah, I don't mean to laugh, but it's what is his?
It's
like,
funny.
What,
though. It's funny.
What is he thinking? Comes to the court. I've always thought that this guy can't play in the center of defense. You know, like he's a very talented player, but is he a center back? No, he's not a center back. I mean, well, you know what, Reggie, the time has come. Better question. He was very confusing. Is he is gone though, right? Like I know the jokes are gone and we saw everything on social media today. No, I think he's confirmed, right? That's what I was going to ask you as an Arsenal fan. Is he coming back next year?
Well, no, he's not. He's not confirmed to come back. They were talking. Arsenal has until June 30th to offer him a contract. Yeah. And if he's not going to be able to play the next two games. So I don't know. Do you he's offer done. Him another contract after the displays that he's put forth for the last year? I don't.
Listen, I'll say this. I think Mikel Arteta is, for me, I think he'll be okay as Arsenal manager. There's a lot. Like the problems run deep in Arsenal, as you know. I think it's trust me, I know a team like that I followed for years, that it's you can't patchwork it. You have to tear it down and build it up. Yep, yeah.
100%.
And I think for me, there's so many questions with Arsenal that, you know, I think it just needs a total overhaul. And I think a person like Mikel Arteta needs to be given the support, because I do think, and I know that sometimes, Reg, you don't, you know, agree with this person, but, you know, he is a winner. He is a successful manager, and not about winner, just, it's not about the winning. It's about, and I know you're saying, you know, Pep needs all this money and these guys need money. But what I'm saying, hear me out. What I'm saying is Arteta has worked for, you know, he's worked with one of the best. He was played under an Arsenal team that went, but I think where he learned a lot, you know, and he seems to me a person who is he's a student, right? He's a student. And I think there's so much that needs to be done, but he needs to be given the opportunity to try to fix it. And whether it be Mikel Arteta or somebody else, we all can see that there's something wrong. We all can see it. And I think, you know, good for him. They asked, you know, he left out Mesut Ozil. Was it something tactical? Yes, it was something tactical.
Well, how many times how many times did Unai Emery say that, and we crucified him?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it's a systemic problem with Arsenal. You know that as a Gunner, you know, a loyal fan. So I really believe that when he said that, and he didn't shy away from it, Reg, and I thought that was good. You know, the commentator was giving him an out if he wanted it. You know, oh, is it maybe, you know, maybe it's been COVID. It's, you know, no, it goes, no, it's tactical. Yeah, tactical decision to leave him out of the 20, right? So that was, again, and again, now you can, you know, have 20. So, yeah, I thought that was, you know, you're looking for those positives. Big picture, if you say you were going to take 3 points from City, probably
no,
not.
No, Joe, that
it's
wasn't,
the manner in which, right? I understand.
That's it. We weren't going, you know, there to say we were going to go to the
Etihad
and take
you are.
3 points. We just thought we were,
but
just
you are.
go play respectably. Don't concede stupid goals. And we were playing on the counterattack, and every time we got the ball, we just gave it away. You can't do that against City.
One bright spot, obviously.
Bright spot.
Four-letter word. Yeah, Leno. He was great.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Could have been eight.
Yeah, he was really good, very, very good. And I thought, wow, I feel bad for him at times.
I see players like that saying, you know what, I've had enough. I see players like Aubameyang saying, yeah, what am I doing? I see players like even Thomas Partey from Atletico Madrid saying, I want to go to that.
The sell has to be this, Reggie. The sell has to be you're going to be part of the revolution. And I don't know if I see Aubameyang with this. You know, as much as I thought he would stay, I'm not so sure. And I think if you can sell him and get something,
I think that's the right move to make.
You know, and it's not because, listen, you know how this movie ends, Arsenal fans. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang will go somewhere and he'll do very well.
Right.
You know that. But it's, you know, it was like when I was so angry with Higuain. You know, I said, he's still going to go somewhere else and back to Juventus and be world class.
Right.
It's just he couldn't do it on his own, you know? Like, and I think there were so many other faults in the squad, and that's what it is. You know you've gone away for a bit, but the faults are still there. You know, I think that's just something that needs to be fixed with Arsenal. And I think, you know, it's something that there's just so many holes. I look at things, and again, as an outsider, someone does not follow them every day, but Martinelli, I've been saying this forever, I don't understand Reggie. He doesn't find a spot in the squad. I don't get it. I don't understand it, Reggie. I mean, maybe I see things, you know, and I just see the highlights, and you'll say, well, you know, he's,
well,
I don't know. Like,
the only thing that I can think of not playing Martinelli, not playing Pepe, is that we have another game on Saturday.
And I think so. I think you're right. Yeah,
right.
And that's why I think, Reggie, I think that, to be fair, Mikel Arteta knew. I think they know. And again, it's different because you say, wow, professional level, professional club. How can you not go and try to win every game? I get it. I understand. But you have to be practical, and we are in a different – we talked about it in our interview with Coach Maria. You know, load management, I know of Cades, became thing. But it is very, very, very important to not burn players out. We're seeing it – you know, all the federations have made the adjustment with 5 substitutions and things of that nature. Right. And we've seen it. Listen, we've seen arguably the best player in the world right now struggling with, you know, getting back to football and he's probably the most fit person, you know, in football. So there's all of these factors, you know, and I think, like I said, let's look at the bare bones. Leno, great. David Luiz, shambolic, awful, terrible, you know, all that stuff. Those are things that I think you already knew as Arsenal fans, right? I mean, you're just, you know, you saw it. So
Arteta got it right because he didn't start him and he didn't want to play him. But 20 minutes in, our center back gets hurt. So you have to put him in because he's the only
fit. That's a great point.
Socrates is hurt. Holding's hurt. Chambers is hurt. He's the only then, center like back said, to put back there. So we had to
play him. And like you said, now, were they both muscular injuries?
Well, it looks like Xhaka, who was a kind of, believe it or not, he's the kind of player that we probably needed in that midfield, you know, to break stuff
up.
No,
I do believe it. I think, listen, I don't, Granit Xhaka can be whatever he is. There's not for some reason, you know, when people give him a hard time, you know, yes, he's not Xavi, but he's a good player that given your squad, he has to be in that squad. So, yeah. Was it a muscular injury, Reg?
Him is ankle ligaments, so he's done.
Okay, you said that. Sorry. So that wasn't okay. So and that's think, something you can't attribute to, you know, the fitness level.
No. And I think
Ceballos
didn't get hurt. It was Paulo Mari.
Oh, sorry.
To me, it looks like Achilles, but from what
So like two freakish things, right? So I remember you texted me and said, "Wow, dropping like flies." I'm like, "Well," because again, I was watching the other game and I said, "Well, like, I mean, that's pretty freakish too, right?" Yeah. So you're playing against City. You're forced to make two very early substitutions, which is already difficult because the substitutions, you know, if you are going to make them now, it's at designated times because of, you know, the pandemic, meaning like what's happened with the training and so on. So you're already down by it. You bring in a guy where no one has faith in, right? We even saw it in the training match, you know, in the exhibition game. It was like, wow, what is he doing? We made note of it last week. So with Brandon John. And so I was like, you know, these are what could go wrong did go wrong. So,
Another game on Saturday. We'll see what happens there. But yeah. I'm not
good to have it back though, Reg. And, you know, sure. Can we mention this? You know, I think that the Premier League, you know, good for them. Names on the back of the jerseys? No. What do they got on the back of the jerseys, Reg?
Black Lives Matter. Yeah. It's
on all teams.
It was a good, nice gesture. Let's just hope that the English FA doesn't say, okay, we did our part and that's all we're going to do. Hopefully they keep it. Not keep Black Lives Matter on the back of the jerseys, but, you know, go forward with what that signifies, you know? So
yeah, for sure. Keep the issue on the forefront and let's start showing some action, like we said last week with Brandon and we've been saying. So absolutely, for sure. So they got that, you know, so good to have that back.
Copa Italia.
Copa Italia, Reg. Did you see what was going on with those virtuals, like, things in the stands? Was kind of crazy.
The first La Liga game that I watched, I thought there was fans there, and I was like, there can't be fans there.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? Yeah.
And then they went out close up on Messi's face, and you could see a little bit in the background, and I'm just like, oh, okay, they're not fans.
Yeah.
Because they pump in the noise and everything, and it sounds like there's fans there.
Well, I thought in the City Arsenal game, I thought it was great, even like on like reacting to plays in the game.
Yeah,
so I thought it was pretty good.
Well choreographed. Yeah. So
I think they learned from the Bundesliga going, hey, you guys should do something, right? So, you know, because they didn't do much. But in the Coppa Italia, what a great story. So let's deal with – you want to deal with the good? I think the really good here is, you know, good for Napoli, great for Rino Gattuso. The story, right? Like him losing his sister. Now, again, he didn't lose her to COVID, I think. Doesn't matter what he lost her to.
Right.
You know, young person, you know, not even 40. Battled long-term illness from what I understand and, you know, lost her a couple of weeks ago. And so, you know, heartbreaking, devastating. And, you know, one of my favorite players of all time, obviously with an AC Milan connection, but all passion, all love. He's all going at it all the time. So it was amazing to see him win a trophy and his players rally around him. So that was a good thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really nice thing. You know, I thought in the game, you know, to be fair, I thought Napoli created a lot more, you know. So they looked, you know, but again, they went to the lottery of penalties and won the Coppa Italia. So congratulations to them and their many passionate fans and so on. The bad, or I would say not the bad, but the confusing. What's going on with Juventus? That's two games since we've been back. No goals. Like, this is the best team by far in Italy in the last whatever time. And of course, they are the benchmark.
Did Ronaldo hit the post that
two
game?
Two games since we're back.
Penalty shot? Or was that Serie A?
No, that was the semifinal game. So they end up winning, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Because it was a two game, so it was the second game. So it was 0-0, right?
Right.
So, so he misses the PK. You know, people want to give Donnarumma a save. I don't know. I touched it a little bit, but anyway, off the post. Stop. Doesn't matter. No, I didn't. I didn't. I don't know. Let's go to the tape. Listen, I'm critical. But anyway, the point being is there something going on with Juventus? And we were saying this before. A lot of people were saying, speaking to a lot of diehard Juventus fans, that, you know, with such attacking talent and a roster so deep, right, Reggie? You know, one of the best in Europe, right? Arguably, you know, and right up there, top three or four. And there's something off. And this is Maurizio Sarri, who, you know, Sarri ball, you know, always, even if win or lose, or play an attractive brand of soccer, football, something's off. And I know Corona and the layoff, I get it, but that's two matches, Reg. No goals from the best team in Italy. Ronaldo doesn't look himself. Okay, that can be something going on there.
Well, that's the guy
it's just something not right.
That's the guy that runs the team. That's the guy who they feed off of. If he's not on, then no one else is going
to
be on.
Something's not right. And Reggie, if I were to tell you, okay, Maurizio Sarri ball, and you know, almost like a tiki taka style, wanting to play. And if I were to tell you that, you know, the guy who plays in the number six role, that D mid role, Miralem Pjanic, he's really struggling with him. You barely noticed him. It doesn't touch the ball a lot. You'd be like, that's not Sarri ball, right?
Right.
Because, you know, in his height of Sarri ball when Jorginho was with him at Napoli and at Chelsea, he was touching the ball and playing. And something's not right. And I know they're saying that Pjanic will be sold to Barcelona, but I'm like, well, maybe the old Pjanic, because he's been out of form even before the COVID pandemic and the stop. Ronaldo, it just doesn't look right. It just doesn't look right, Reggie. I'm echoing the sentiments of a lot of Juventus fans. You know, I think, you know, I don't know why Aaron Ramsey, he doesn't play a little more in this group, but there's just certain things that just don't look right with this Juventus group.
Ramsey, Pjanic. Both gone next year, I believe. I think Sarri's trying to get Jorginho back into Juve. So
yeah,
can have
there's
his guy.
There's a lot of rumors. Yeah, Reggie. Yeah. There's also rumors of bright young Italian starlet who. Yeah, Pogba for sure. I mean, that would be.
Well, that's a swap that they want. They want Ramsey for Pogba. They want to give United Ramsey and take Pogba, right? So.
Right. So that'd be the biggest. I would say impact. You know, bringing Pogba back to where he was best. You know, in terms of form in his life and his career at the club level. But there's also talk of, you know, a couple things. Maybe, you know, the up and coming Italian starlet, Sandro Tonali from Brescia, really bright young player.
Yep.
Resembles Pirlo with the hair, but plays more like a hybrid between him and Gattuso, actually. But again, you know, younger, so it wouldn't be there. Also talks of Verratti coming from PSG. And for me, that might be a fit. But again, as we always say, Reggie, talk, rumor here and there.
Yeah.
But something's not. It just doesn't look, you know, like there's something right. How about this, Reggie? You know, Ronaldo's sister at it again on Instagram.
What did she do?
Saying, you know, you can only do so much. Saying to Ronaldo, don't worry, you can only do so much playing this way.
Oh,
and
that's a shot at
many
Sarri?
People love to. And many people have taken it that way. So I don't know. I know you're thinking, right? You're thinking Ronaldo is actually, he actually runs his sister's Instagram and he's speaking on behalf of, yeah, exactly, right?
It could be all possible, but Joe, I'm glad the drama's back. I'm so glad the drama's back.
Yeah, it's good to have it back. Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for Coach Maria joining us this week. She was fantastic. I know what I'm looking forward to this week, and I hope Arsenal can bounce back against. I think they're playing Brighton at home, so hopefully they can bounce back. Well, I guess it doesn't matter where they're playing now because there's no fans anyway. But
no, but yeah.
What are you looking forward to, Joe?
You know, again, just games. I'm looking forward to obviously Serie A coming back too.
Yeah, for sure.
With the full Serie A season. I'm really interested to see Lazio. I think this could be a really good chance for them to, you know, to really push Juventus, you know. And I'm actually looking for, you know, I am looking for Juventus to bounce back. I want to see this group. I want to see if they can, you know, bounce back. Obviously, AC Milan, I want to see what they do. But, you know, I want to see that. And again, tomorrow, I know that you're really excited, Reggie. What you're hiding from everybody is that, you know, Tottenham will be playing Manchester United.
I'll watch that game. No problem. I'll watch it. I've watched two games a day here.
It doesn't matter what we watch now, right? We just want to watch games. So it's good to have it back. Yeah.
And if you're not watching La Liga, do that. It's a fantastic league too. I'm not being sarcastic. It's really good, actually.
There you go. Look, the pandemic has changed Reggie. Exactly. I agree. Awesome.
I'm watching Osasuna versus Real Betis and on my edge of my seat. So anyways,
that's enough for tonight.
That's for sure. That's we'll end it on that. Guys, thanks for listening and we'll catch you next week.